802. Go to RC Country Hobbies, Folsom Boulevard. Not just toys for big boys, for everyone in the entire family. Make it happen. It is Dave, Nate, and Katie. If we can get her reconnected. I see Katie on FaceTime, unlike you guys, while we're doing the show. She is in Memphis. Her connection has been kind of spotty all day. One of my favorite things that only I get to experience. It's my show within a show. Is when Katie's connection isn't working. She's gesticulating wildly to me while I'm talking, and there's just nothing I can do. But
kind of like a dream. You can't hear a word she's saying, but.
Oh my God!
There she is.
You know what?
I knew the timing of that. As long as I said something, you'd jump right in.
Good point.
The problem is that I just want you to know that I'm not hearing you and that I'm not connected. And so, if you can just give me a thumbs up,
I did.
Thumbs up your face.
Oh, Katie, did we lose you again? Yeah, I think we lost her again.
Darn.
So we'll have Scott Kaplan on here in just moments from the mighty 1090 down in San Diego. A lot of stuff to talk about, not just the San Diego potential move to L.A., but also the actual football game being played this weekend down in San Diego between the Chargers and your Oakland Raiders.
Yes.
We also have in this hour, so make sure you tune in. We have a lot of ways to bribe you. We're going to do the Bearco moment of the game coming up, and you can win a nice prize pack there. And we have not one. I was just informed two pair of tickets to go see Uriah Faber, who just joined us, along with Paige Van Zandt and a few others, doing the old fisticuffs thing at Golden One Center. Purchase tickets for yourself, Lazy Bones, at Ticketmaster.com. And thanks to Uriah and Katie, we've broken bread with him a couple times. He's a good kid, and not so much a kid anymore. And it'll be a very special moment this weekend at Golden One Center, seeing that walkout happen one more time.
I know, and I'm kind of sad because the only UFC event I've ever been to was to watch Uriah fight at Sleep Train, and it was difficult for me. It was really difficult to watch a friend step into that ring, and it's but you know what? I would have gone to the last one, but we're on the road.
It is the worst part about covering the sport, I promise you, when you get to know these people and you interview them and you watch their careers happen, and then when they actually get in the ring, it's not like it's an at-bat or a pitch or a run through the middle or a dunk.
It's kind of like if that guy in the batter's box just got repeatedly pelted in the face with fastballs.
Yeah.
And in every sport, you have 162 games, you have 16 games, you have 82 games. In mixed martial arts, you have the fight, and the fight will go a max of 25 minutes if it's a championship fight. That's it. All the hard work, everything going into it, down to that one thing. And one of the worst experiences of my life with this sport was when Joseph Benavidez fought Mighty Mouse Johnson here in Sacramento for the title, and he was so hungry. He had worked so hard, and I was
literally hungry.
Yes, very. And I was sitting next to Joseph's two brothers and his mom, and Joseph got knocked cold in the first round, and you really see that other side where
That doesn't sound like any fun at all, what you just described.
Literally, the opposite of fun, being next to his mother, who was in tears, and good for her. Of course she would be in tears. You know, it's tough for, we were just talking about how it's tough for us to watch our friends fight. Imagine being a mother watching your son get knocked cold. And then another experience, that was the worst, I'll never forget. I was riding in a vehicle with Scott Smith as he was fighting in Strikeforce. He had just fought against Robbie Lawler, and he had gotten knocked out. He'd gotten stopped. He and I were riding back in the car. It was on I-5. It was about 1:30 in the morning, and I remember Scott getting on the phone with his son, who was about 6 at the time, and Scott had said if he won the fight, they were going to Disneyland, and his son was crying because he thought that he wasn't going to get to go to Disneyland, and Scott had to explain to him, Daddy's okay. We're still going to Disneyland. It looks worse on TV. That's the type of stuff, the other side of that sport that you absolutely don't see. We'll switch. Scott Kaplan works at the old mighty 1090. Does a fine radio show down there. Also on the sidelines, talk about multi-talented this weekend, Raiders and Chargers for our very own CBS Sports. Scott, it's Dave, Katie, and Nate. Thank you for joining us this morning. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me. Appreciate you guys having me on. Thanks.
No, our pleasure. Before we get to the game, Scott, obviously you guys have bigger fish to fry down there. Odds are, you know, let's be honest, playoffs probably not in the cards, but you guys are fighting for the life of your team as you know it in San Diego. Now, we're doing the same thing up here with the Raiders. Here's a little bit of a difference, though. San Diego, if they move to L.A., it's, what, an hour, 2 hours away. Does that matter to fans down there? What's the general consensus if the Chargers did go to L.A.?
So, first of all, I think that was really, really sweet the way you said that kind of still fighting for your playoff.
I know. I mean,
you know,
yeah.
This season is toast for the San Diego Chargers at 5-8. You know, at best, they could win their final three games and get back to 500 and make it look kind of respectable. But the flip side of it is they'll probably lose at home this week to the Raiders. Yeah. They'll be on the road in Cleveland. And if there's one team that can find a way to screw up Cleveland's winless season, leave it to the San Diego Chargers. As for the move, I'll tell you guys, it's kind of like people who said that if Donald Trump wins the election, I'm moving to Canada. Now, how many people do you know who said that who actually packed their stuff and moved? Because I don't know any. But the Charger fans who today swear on their lives that they hate L.A. and they would never go to a game in L.A., those people are also saying they're my team. I'd still watch them and support them, but I would never go to L.A., and I don't buy it for a second. I'll tell you guys why. If you've ever been to Dallas, to Jerry Jones's stadium, and if you haven't, make sure you put it on your bucket list. It's the most spectacular stadium you've ever been in your life, and the one that they're building in Los Angeles is going to even outdo it. So when you go to a game at a Raider game in the Coliseum or a Charger game in Qualcomm, the stadiums are disgusting, the bathrooms are gross, the food is bad, the sight lines are terrible, et cetera, et cetera. The stadium they're going to build in Los Angeles is going to be the best in the world at the time. And I believe for all these Charger fans that swear they won't drive 2 hours north, I believe many of them will.
You know, Scott, there are a few things that I enjoy more than a political peeing contest. And with the San Diego City Council sending a letter to Dean Spanos recently, it seems like kind of a sweetheart deal, right? They're just saying, hey, you guys pay for the stadium. We'll give you $1 a year lease for 99 years. That didn't go over well with Dean Spanos. Why is that?
Because the two guys, there were four people who signed the letter, four city council people. The two guys who really wrote the letter were the two most outspoken anti-Charger downtown stadium vote. They were the most far and away visible, outspoken, opinionated, etc. These two guys, these two city council people, their names are Scott Sherman and Chris Kate. It's immaterial for everybody listening up north. But those two guys bitterly opposed the Chargers downtown stadium. Now, I'm not telling you that their opposition was the reason the Chargers lost this election, but can you imagine that a month after the election, you get a letter from the two guys that did everything they could do to defeat your measure? Oh, and by the way, here's another reason that the Chargers were insulted. The letter was apparently going to be delivered on Tuesday morning of this week. But on Monday night, this same city council person hand-delivered the letter to the local Associated Press writer, who then published the letter. So, and then this is beautiful. Then he had a radio interview scheduled on our radio station at 7 a.m. Tuesday morning. So the whole point was, this guy, who is a total self-promoting clown of a city councilman, this guy literally had all of the media done before the letter was ever delivered to the Chargers. You can imagine why they find it insulting. Further, they also think that this whole ridiculous notion of a 99-year lease at $1 per year, it seems like such an amazing deal that everybody would jump on it. And there, it's not a deal. It was something they threw out there in the water to see if they could get some nibbles. And it's the way the Chargers look at it is it's a complete insult that you're trying to embarrass us by putting this out there for public consumption.
You know, I'm curious, Scott, because you have a much better pulse on kind of the people in San Diego, the voters. I mean, the whole thing that was turned down, it was they were trying to raise the hotel tax. And this is something I've never understood. Hotel taxes do not really affect the people that live in San Diego. What was the opposition to this really all about?
Oh, you guys are going to love this. You won't even believe this. So, okay, San Diego is a great tourist town, right? I mean, considered one of the top tourist destinations in the entire country. It's got the weather, it's got the beautiful sights, it's got great tourist attractions, restaurants, nice downtown. I can keep going. So San Diego is a great tourist town. The people who really run the politics of this city are the people who run the hotel and tourism industry. Now, follow me here. They want to raise the hotel taxes, but they want the money generated by the hotel taxes to go to an expanded downtown convention center. Well, that sounds like a great idea, but the convention center sits on the bay, and the environmentalist community here says, absolutely not. We'll never let you expand this convention center and block the public's view of the water. So they continue to sue and win against the tourism industry. So again, the tourism industry wants to raise the taxes, but they want to direct where the money goes. In fact, it's so dirty. Listen to this. About two, maybe 3 years ago, the tourism industry internally voted to raise the hotel taxes, and they were going to use the money for an expanded convention center. That is, until an attorney sued them and proved that it was unconstitutional for them to be able to raise the taxes because they didn't ask the public for a vote. You can't raise taxes without asking the public for a vote. By the way, as you guys can tell, for someone who picks up the sports page as his first part of the newspaper or turns on ESPN when I turn on the TV, I've had to learn this whole world of dirty politics in San Diego. So the original question, why wouldn't we raise hotel taxes and have out-of-towners pay for it? It's because the hotel and tourism industry would never go for it. They own the politicians in this town. Therefore, the politicians would never support it. And it was such a brilliant idea because not only would that money pay for the stadium, it would also spurn a tremendous amount of growth, particularly in the tourism and hotel industry, just as you can see what's going on in a city like Minneapolis. People don't go to Minneapolis to vacation, but they do sometimes go to Minneapolis for conventions. San Diego could be a top-tier destination for conventions, but the tourism industry convinced the people of this town that the more people have to pay in hotel taxes, the less likely they are to have their conventions in San Diego, and I'll never believe that ever.
Scott Kaplan joining us, sidelines for CBS this weekend, Chargers and Raiders, also hosts his show down on the mighty 1090 in San Diego. Obviously very educated on the situation. Scott, let me digress here as a fellow sports guy who picks up the paper and turns on the ESPN just like you. I'm trying to think about if I can understand what you're going through. Let me try, though. It would almost be like if you had owners who were asking the city to raise taxes. And let's just say this city can't really raise hotel taxes because nobody wants to come here. So,
hey, what city?
So they try to raise they try to pass a couple of measures. And then 2 weeks before the measures go to a vote, they do a commercial for Carl's Jr. touting the $5,000 burger, or excuse me, $6,000 burger, which includes a very nice bottle of wine and a Carl's Jr. $6 burger. It's amazing when you think whether it's a town that's not known for tourism like Sacramento or one of the most beautiful destinations in the country, San Diego. Everyone's corrupt, everybody's selfish, everyone's weird, and nothing ever gets done.
Yeah, but you know what's interesting? Is that when you go into Sacramento, into downtown Sacramento, and obviously all of your listeners do, people down here in San Diego maybe don't, and I've been encouraging people in San Diego, you know what? Get on a plane, fly up to Sacramento. It's very easy to get there, and look at the development yep. that is happening in Sacramento. You know, that new arena yep. in downtown Sacramento is fantastic. And I'm not suggesting to you that it is the Jerry World of all arenas. I don't know that they spent every last dollar making it the greatest arena on planet Earth. But it is brand new. It is in downtown Sacramento, and I don't know a lot about the city of Sacramento other than I come up there a couple times a year for a Kings game. You guys could tell me better, but I look at downtown Sacramento, and I see the construction that is going on. They're building a beautiful Kimpton Hotel right next door to the arena. I can see all of the cleaning up that's going on in downtown Sacramento, and my guess would be that in 5 years, downtown Sacramento is going to be great. Not only does it have that brand-new arena and all the construction going on around it, but how about where they're building that brand-new MLS stadium eventually and the expansion of housing in downtown Sacramento? I mean, to me, it's pretty obvious that if you love your team and you want your city to be progressive, building sports facilities can be a big part of that. I mean, what's the likelihood that Paul McCartney was going to be playing a bunch of concerts up in Sacramento?
Zero.
I mean, to me, what the Kings ownership has done with that arena is brilliant for the city of Sacramento.
Well, and Scott, you nailed it, and you nailed it about 500 different ways. Whereas Sacramento and San Diego are nowhere near each other when it comes to destination, that's what makes the San Diego situation so stupid. Again, hotel taxes weren't really an option for us, whereas in San Diego, people are going to come down there, and it's the people that come down there, not that live there, that would end up by proxy paying for that stadium. And you're 100% right. You mentioned the Kimpton Hotel. You've got the MLS stadium that's going to be here in an MLS team by 2020. And you go down there, it's nothing but cranes and pitchforks and other construction equipment that I can't pronounce. I know, not pitchforks, but you get what I'm saying. Everyone's building everything down there. And we had a saying down here or up here, which was bigger than basketball. And you can write it off as hokey, but it really was the core of the pitch for this thing, was that it is a, you use it as a catalyst at the city center to develop outside of that. And it's amazing to me. That's why I'm sticking on this, Scott. Because from my perspective, and I think a lot of people up here, when you think of San Diego, you think of a fully formed city that has a ton of people going there and everything going for it. It's amazing for me to hear you say that San Diego needs some of that same downtown development that we did.
Let me tell you something. I don't know how much you guys know. I don't know how public it is about who the investors are in the Sacramento Kings. I can tell you this. There's a group of guys here in San Diego who are major shareholders.
The Jacobs brothers.
Correct.
Yeah.
And the Jacobs brothers, their father founded Qualcomm.
Yep.
And Paul Jacobs, who is very active with the Kings ownership, he was the CEO of Qualcomm for many years, and he's a genius. Every cell phone that you hold in your hands, this guy has a piece of the technology that makes that cell phone work the way it does.
He's amazing.
His younger brother, Jeff Jacobs, was the chief marketing officer. So he traveled the world and dealt with all the government leaders, et cetera, et cetera. The point is this. These guys, along with obviously Vivek, who went out and bought this team and has, you know, big dreams for this team, the Jacobs brothers in particular are such revolutionary thinkers that they will, and they're so excited about the opportunities in Sacramento. And there's a lot of other San Diego money that is being pumped into Sacramento right now. These guys, they are so excited about what the future of Sacramento is. And for people that don't know them, they can Google all about these guys, and Google will probably never tell you what you really need to know. Just to give you an example, they own a resort here in the richest part of San Diego called Rancho Santa Fe. And this resort, they bought it several years ago. It was inexpensive at the time, and they put millions and millions and millions of dollars into this resort. It's called the Rancho Valencia for anybody that wants to Google it. And it's a small boutique hotel, but they pumped millions into this place because they've traveled the world. They know what the greatest hotels look like and feel like and what the food is like and so on. And they've taken the best from around the world and they've pumped it into their resort. That's the kind of people we're talking about. That's what they plan to do in Sacramento.
Well, Scott, you know, we can talk at nauseam about kind of the politics behind all of this, but it all comes down to the actual product on the field. And there is a game this Sunday. Raiders have the opportunity to clinch a playoff spot, you know, if they beat your Chargers. Sorry about that. But what do you see in this game? I know the Raiders are very hot coming off of that loss, though, to the Chiefs. But how do you see this game for San Diego?
Well, I see, first of all, I want you guys to know that Charger fans are so disgusted with all of this stadium talk. And, you know, there's a real hate relationship between the fan base and the ownership. I suspect that this game will be 70-30 Raider fans to Charger fans. This will be like a home game for the Raiders. And believe me, it's been like that for other teams. I can remember a Monday night game about a year or two ago with New England fans completely dominating or Steeler fans taking over Qualcomm Stadium. So first and foremost, I think it's a home game for the Raiders. Secondly, the Chargers have a lot of health problems. Not only all the guys that have been put on injured reserve, you know, they've got the most guys on injured reserve of any team in the NFL, but now just this week alone, a Melvin Gordon, who was having a breakout second year, he's hurt, not expected to play. Joey Bosa, the third pick overall in the draft for the Chargers, he's a guy that hurt his neck last week when he ran into Cam Newton, and Newton didn't move. They've got so many other issues on this team. Secondary is a big problem, and so Carr, I would think, would take great advantage of that. Run defense has never really been strong for the Chargers, and they've got a defensive lineman now who's sort of a role player, but he just got suspended by the league for PEDs. And all of this, stadium controversy, 5-8 record, tons of injuries, questions about the head coach's future, et cetera. It goes on and on. I would expect the Raiders to come down here and tear the Chargers apart. The only thing that keeps the Chargers potentially in this game is one guy, Philip Rivers. And when the Chargers abandon their game plan and they just let Rivers wing it like he's playing ball out back of his house in Alabama, the chances are he could either burn the Raiders and put up points or do what he's done the last few weeks, which is throw a ton of interceptions because he just wants to go down fighting. I expect the Raiders to win the game, and frankly, I expect them to win the game handily.
That's Scott Kaplan. Follow him on Twitter, at Scott Kaplan. That's Kaplan with a K. You can also check him out on the sidelines this weekend for the Raiders and Chargers game. Appreciate it. Thought we'd spend more time on the game itself, as it sounds like you're getting in a vehicle. But you know what? It's a great conversation on a subject that, unfortunately, we're both all too familiar with.
Yeah, and I'll just close with this, and I appreciate you guys having me again. You know, the sad part would be that the Raiders are actually getting good again, and Mark Davis seems really married to this Vegas idea. And I've posed it to Mark many times and said, come on, you're just using Vegas as leverage to get Oakland motivated. And, of course, he swears that that's not the case. And I said, okay, tell me a scenario whereby you don't go to Vegas. And his answer was, if the owners don't allow me to go.
Right. Yeah, it's not looking good for Oakland, that's for sure. But you know what? Still hope alive, just like with the Chargers, as long as there's a chip and a chair. Appreciate it, Scott. Thank you.
Thanks, Scott.
Pleasure. Thank you, guys.
All right, take care.
Last year at the Super Bowl, ran into Mark Davis and pretty much asked him the same question, and his response was, just win, baby!
Yep.
So
I remember that. I remember you hanging out with Mark Davis and telling us the next day, he's like a normal guy. He didn't have an entourage.
Just win, baby.
We'll take a break. Ken Rudolph coming up next with the news, and you coming up next to winner, perhaps, is the 11th caller at 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Get yourself tickets to the UFC Fight Night, Golden One Center, Paige Van Zandt, Michelle Watterson, and witness Uriah Faber's last fight. Ticketmaster.com. Yes, that's right. The home of the Raiders playing the Chargers theme 2 days before the game. That's a fantastic idea from our dear friend, Matt George. Not any of us here in the control room, or excuse me, the talk studio. We're back momentarily. Don't go away on the drive. Sports 1140 KHDK. Mm-hmm. 8:50, time to go to RC Country Hobbies on Folsom Boulevard. Not just toys for big boys, for everyone in the entire family. Congratulations to our big Bearco winner of the day. That's right. There was actually a Bearco moment of the game last night, even though it was a disgusting game if you're a Kings fan. Here was that amazing moment. John in Citrus Heights.
John.
Congratulations, my man. You have won a Bearco Redwood $50 gift certificate and a Sacramento Kings prize pack. Dave, Katie, Nate. Katie in cold, chilly Memphis. Nate across from me looking cold and chilly. As we wrap up the program, guys, there's some stuff to get to here. We've covered a lot today. Thanks to Uriah Faber and Scott Kaplan, along with Matt Barrows, for joining us. I guess we should finish up, because we haven't talked about it in about an hour and a half, with the Kings from last night in what was a yucky game. And we've talked a lot about, did we want to see Dave Yeager play the rookies more? Do we understand why he didn't? Why did Boogie Cousins rest yesterday? And then to top it all off, you guys will all mostly probably either read or see and toss your phone. Not one, but two columns today from Bill Simmons, where he's got DeMarcus Cousins photoshopped into a Boston Celtics uniform. It's actually I'll give him credit for this. I will give him credit. He's an unabashed Boston homer. I can't hate on homers. And he has a large pull, so he's not stopping with this, number one. And number two, it's actually a very interesting exercise what he did. He wrote one column. Both take place in 2018, both columns. One column is 2018. The Celtics are coming off their first championship with DeMarcus Cousins, his first MVP, and talking about how he has ingratiated himself into the Boston environment with quotes from guys like Dan Shaughnessy and made up examples and stories and all this stuff. The other column talks about how Danny Ainge is doing a TNT game with Kevin Harlan, and everybody was looking as Houston's DeMarcus Cousins passes by Danny Ainge, seeing if they're going to make eye contact or not. They didn't. And then Danny's quoted later in this fake story as saying, you know, we hoped it worked out. It didn't. If it had, obviously, I wouldn't be doing color commentary, and Brad Stevens wouldn't be coaching Duke right now. So it's a best case and worst case scenario from a Boston Celtics fan.
Two perspectives, neither of which take place in reality.
No. Here's what is a bit of reality, Katie Christensen. There's something floating around today because with the new CBA, guys like DeMarcus Cousins, guys like Paul George are eligible for the new super extension, which would allow the Kings to sign him for or extend him for 6 years. Now, with the estimated salary cap adjustments coming up early this summer, here is what the contract extension for Boogie Cousins would most likely look like. 6 years, $221.5 million.
Ooh.
Salaries as follows. Year one, 18. Year two, 36. Year three, 38. Year four, 41. Year five, 43. And year six, $45,696,000. What does all that mean? You combine that $45 million in year six, combined with the fact that the Kings can pay him more than any other team, you're looking at a difference of around $60 million. Another reason when it comes to what the Kings have to do and why Vlade has his work cut out for him is, remember this, if they let him go or if they trade him and it doesn't work out, here's the thing. People talk about the pick swaps going on with Philadelphia. Now, realize a couple of things. If the Kings finish outside the top 10 this year, that pick conveys over to the Chicago Bulls as the last remnants of the Omri Caspi, J.J. Hickson debacle a few years back. So they would lose this year's deal. This, I believe, is the last year that the Kings have the Philadelphia 76ers have the opportunity to swap with the Kings. That could be off by 1 year as far as a pick swap. But here's a part of the trade that people aren't remembering. I don't see this that much. Regardless, in 2018, Philly gets the Kings' first-round pick, and it's unprotected. They get the pick.
That's if there's no swap, right? Or do they get it
That's
regardless?
An addition.
Okay.
They get the pick. So when you're trying to rebuild, just keep in mind, if you do that, you better add picks in. And if you're bad and you lose your pick, you're in a further quandary because you don't have your pick for one of those years. Philly's getting that pick.
I like how they hedged their bets that, like, they could just dump all these picks because
they're going to be good. Yeah, oops.
You know, I went as far last night on Twitter as to say, hey, this is what, for all those people that want to get rid of DeMarcus or Rudy or both of them, this is what you have to look forward to, right? And people are like, oh, but you know what? If they get rid of them, they're not trading them for reserves. No, they're trading them for draft picks because they don't have them. That's the thing. Right? I'm not saying that it's going to happen that DeMarcus and Rudy are not going to be here, but if they decide to go all the way for a rebuild, that's part of it, Dave. They have to get pick.
Yeah. They have to refill that pick vault there, and maybe not for Rudy. Maybe they get somebody for Rudy. Maybe Rudy ends up being a Timberwolf, and you got Ricky Rubio and somebody here playing. You don't know, but
Timberwolf.
But I, it's I think Akis Yourcostas of Sacktown Royalty wrote a really good article the other day on rebuilding and how it's not as easy as you think, and it's got a lot of that information in there. I suggest everybody read that just to give yourself another perspective. For Katie Christensen in Memphis, Nate Goodyear right here. I'm Carmichael Dave. Thanks to Matt George and Kevin Sheritz. We'll see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. The lowdown is at noon to 3. And don't forget, we got that toy drive tomorrow. We'll be out at Malt and Mash along with the lowdown all day long. Bring down an unwrapped toy. You get a gift certificate to Jiffy Lube, and you get yourself a chance to win Kings tickets. So we'll see you tomorrow for Malt and Mash. Enjoy the rest of your broadcast day right here on Sports 1140 KHDK.